This is the Feminine Podcast, the official podcast of Feminine, discussing all things femme, a little bit of EM, and everything in between. I'm Jenny Beck Esme, editor-in-chief of Feminine. We are really excited over at Feminine to be offering our Fix Foundation partnerships now available for Fix 19. So do you work for a department that wants to make a statement that they advocate for gender equity? Get your department to take a look at our partnership packages that are available at feminem.org or email fix@feminem.org. Get those packages locked in early because we only have a limited number that are available. All right, on to our Fix 18 content. This is from Dr. Michael Van Ruyen, a chairman who I know advocates for gender equity because he was a speaker at Fix 18. He's the chairman of emergency medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital and a professor of emergency medicine at Harvard Medical School and Harvard School of Public Health. He took on the heavy topic of family leave policies in his talk, Rethinking Family Leave Policies. He was an excellent addition to our Fix 18 lineup with his talk on rethinking these policies, why they matter, and how we can do them better. Enjoy.
Thank you very much. It's really a great honor to be here and so interesting to be such in a significant gender minority. A couple of really great things. One is that I'm just running into so many people that have been friends and colleagues for a long time. And the other one is actually understanding what it's like to wait in line for the bathroom. And then when they gave me the shirt and the bag to put on, it was a women's cut shirt and it didn't work for me. So I got the real one, which is so super cool. So thank you. So I want to talk about something that led me to a more philosophical approach, which I'll end on, but at the beginning, it's a very concrete thing that we had in our department, which is the issue of family leave policies. I have peppered this, by the way, with post-impressionist artists that are women, except for a couple notable exceptions at the end. The challenge was, in emergency medicine, we felt that family leave policies weren't really reflective of the challenges that particularly women had in leading up to their leave, having a leave, and then afterwards as well. And so we wanted to come up with a better policy and to do it. Now, it might surprise you that as a man, I just wanted to get the policy out there without talking to anybody and finish it. And it turned out to be not the way to do it, and it turned out to be that I have a really spectacular an active women's group that advises me, and they advised me not to do that and to think about it, and so I did. And I appreciate their input because most of this is due to their input. So I wanted to come up with a policy that was made more sense. And so I really talked to the women's group about how to approach where we're going and what we can do with this, how to look at some national standards and national norms and understand what other people did so that we can come up with something that is good for everybody, good for men, good for women, and we could end up paying for it and still fits within the confines of the institution. So we had to kind of figure that out. And so the first thing I did is I wanted to understand what the rest of the country did. And so I did a kind of a look at national standards and national norms around the country. We have this thing, the Academic Chairs has a web, like a listserv thing that we ask each other questions. And one of the questions that I ask the Academic Chairs is to say, like, what do you do? What are your policies? What do they look like? And so I got responses from 24 of kind of the like-minded institutions or institutions that are most similar to ours to ask what they did in family leave. And what I found really changed the way I approached this problem, because at first I was just kind of doing it to make sure that we had a fair policy. But after getting the results of this, I was really irritated. And it really, I found that it was pathetic, actually. And what I found is that in the policy that there was almost half of the departments, like my department, these are big academic emergency departments, had no paid leave at all, which was preposterous, right? It's the dumbest thing ever. And furthermore, there's many of them have no unpaid leave. So there was, I kind of couldn't believe it. And so when I looked at this, among the places, there were some that had 6 to 8 weeks and some that had 10 to 12 weeks of paid leave, okay. And then some had some unpaid leave, that's fine. But the collective was pretty dismal. I further wanted to know, and this was at the prompting of the women's group, what do we do with night shifts? Because as I've never been pregnant, but my wife is an OB-gyn doc and also has been pregnant several times. And she assures me that it's just not super fun to be heading into a shift at nighttime when you're, you know, ready to deliver. So understanding if we can actually, I mean, I'm right. If I think, just want to make sure I'm okay there. So sure. I mean, I wanted to know. We wanted to know how we can make life a little bit better for people heading into delivery, as well as after they come back from leave. And so we wanted to find out what the rest of the nation does. And it turned out that there's no change. Most places don't change the night schedule at all. Especially leading, this one on the top is night shifts leading before delivery, either made up or absorbed by the department. In other words, if you have to do your night shifts later on, or if the department absorbs them, only one out of the 24 actually absorbed them into the rest of the department and didn't make you do them again, and that was our department, actually, that little orange or little yellow sliver. And then night shifts after returning, is there a reduction in night shifts after returning because people are pumping and trying to manage kids and all the rest of it as well? And most places don't do any changes at nights, and all of them, even if they do, they allow you to make those nights up at another time. Also, like, not great, right? So we wanted to come up with a policy that's better. So what we really tried to do is look at, well, this is our policy before, which I thought was not that bad. It turned out to be not that great. Before it was eight weeks paid, 4 for men, 4 weeks unpaid, and 4 weeks of no nights before delivery that we would absorb by the department. So, okay, sounds generally reasonable, but it didn't really accommodate for all of the time that people would like to be, at least not necessarily have to work right before they deliver, and especially the time when people come back after delivery when they are, you know, the combination of taking care of infants and pumping and managing everything when they come back. So we wanted to do it better. Our policy afterwards is 8 weeks paid. This is written in the institution, so we didn't have a lot of latitude with some of this stuff because the institution has a policy. When the institution changes and goes to 12 weeks, we'll do that as well. 4 weeks or more unpaid as requested, so we can be flexible about unpaid leave that gets absorbed by the individual later on. And then what the women's group suggested and they wanted us to think about is, could we do better when it relates to sort of no nights before and no nights after you return from leave? And I actually didn't think it was possible until we thought of how we could distribute it and how would the rest of the faculty that has to absorb those shifts really figure out how to do it, until we decided, you know, why don't we just make a nocturnist program? And so out of this, we decided just to make a nocturnist program so that people can actually choose to be part of the nocturnist program and not work any nights at all during that time or any other time. So that, I think, is actually going to make a difference, not just for the women who are delivering or post-delivery, but also for everybody who wants to manage their nights better. We did a couple other things. The state of lactation rooms was pretty pathetic, and we're still working on it, actually, to try to get, the stories of women have to be in a stall of a bathroom with the cord going out someplace, and pumping is ridiculous. And so, and we had the same thing. We had a lactation room that doubled as a nap room for the nursing staff, which I also thought was preposterous. And so we're working on that still. We're still trying to sort of wrestle that under control, but we're getting new lactation rooms and better lactation rooms that have actually equipment and high flow pumps and all the other stuff that we need, just to be more attentive to it. And then one additional thing that's specific for academics is actually that when women get a grant and that covers and buys down their time, it shouldn't buy down their maternity leave. In other words, we should cover their maternity leave, and that grant should then be applied in full to the rest of their time. So, yeah, thank you. Well, and that, again, was the women's group suggestion, and it was a really good one, and it's actually, like, dumb and easy, right? And what this led me to do is, like, this is the notable non-women painter Vincent van Gogh, because I think I got in my own way probably the most in this, and that is that, you know, I had to really learn to listen to the group and understand what they were saying and to try to do it better and to take my time and not try to solve the problem right away and to listen. I got that, but it also changed me a lot in the way that I'm thinking of our young women faculty, particularly mothers, and I really wanted to make my thing, a marker of my tenure in the emergency department, to be a little bit different. And that is that there's some things to me that are easy to fix, right? It's easy to fix gender equity in pay. I mean, it's essential, and it has to happen, and it's ridiculous that it doesn't exist anywhere. But it's easy, because it just has to be. And other things like gender equity in scheduling or academic advancement, those are things that are demonstrable and easy to do and need to be done. it's not that they're less important, they're spectacularly important, but they have to be done. But the harder things are actually keeping women in the game when they're young mothers. Like, that's the real interesting thing. And actually, if I would have had the confidence, I would have suggested that be the topic of my talk today, not maternity leave policies, because maternity, you know, family leave policies have numbers and I can hide behind them, that's okay. But the real thing that I became most interested in is how to keep young women in the game. And that is that when women, and I saw this with my wife, when women start to have a baby and a second baby, I get a lot of young women in my department that say, you know what, maybe I'm going to go down to part-time, or maybe I'm going to not take a leadership role, or maybe I'm not going to go to these conferences, these leadership development conferences, or things like that. And they start getting outpaced by their male colleagues. And that's a dangerous thing, because the decision to go from vice chair to a chair is easy. That's just based, it's a meritocracy. And if you haven't reached vice chair, you're not going to be a chair. But the real difference comes in those early phases when we're trying to get women to stay in the game. And so my real interest is to get a young woman who's had a baby or a second baby and is deciding how to balance the career when it's nuts. And, you know, society says women still have to be at home more than men, and I'm not going to change that. But what I can change is how we encourage and keep women in the game. And so my real interest is to try to say, you know what, I want you to be my division chief or an assistant clinical director or a, you know, the director of observation services. They come with like a minute of buy-down time, so it doesn't really compensate for the amount of time they spend. But we can adapt those positions so that you can stay in the game and so you don't get outpaced by men. So that's become a real interest of mine. I'm trying to read on it and understand it and do it. We're still in early days, but I appreciate all the women in my department that have worked me through it and helped me to do it and helped me get out of my own way as well. But I think it's actually where the money is in terms of advancing women leaders in the future. So in summary, I'd like to say, and this Jackson Pollock is good because, you know, like all of this, it's not super clear where to go. There's some things that are easy fixes that need to be fixed and some things that take a little more specific attention and individualized attention but have to get done. So I really appreciate the vibe we have in our department because we have a group of women that is really thoughtful and engaged and really pushes women's leadership to the fore and really tries to help advise me as well. And I think it's going to be a really interesting era for us. So I'm learning myself how to get out of my own way, not get in my own way, I guess, and how to learn to sort of listen to and come up with creative solutions. And I think with all of that, we can move the needle a little more than we've been doing. So for all of my great colleagues here, thank you, and thanks for the privilege of talking to you today.